So this is MP3 number two. This is the scientific information on mindfulness meditation and how it improves your health to learn how to do it right. So looking at this handout, it talks about the consequences of fear. At the moment, things are changing so rapidly, and fear-filled news is so constantly pulling at your attention. It is important to be proactive, to stay as positive and out of fear as possible, for a number of reasons. Fear is not a bad thing. It was designed by our biology to keep us safe in true emergency situations. But because of the way our biology activates fear in our bodies, it becomes a problem if sustained for long periods of time, as is happening in our culture right now. So the following information is taken from a book called The Psychobiology of Mind-Body Healing. It's a graduate school level book I use in my training course for professional clinicians. And one of the things it talks about was that fear was designed by our biological nature to not last for more than 20 minutes. And now we're talking about this thing called the fight-or-flight system, which was to keep us safe from the saber-toothed tiger. If you think about it, in that time, 20 minutes, according to our biological ancestry, we are either being eaten or have escaped being eaten, and in either case, the emergency is over. So if you watch the gazelles on the National Geographic video, they're being chased by the predator, and then one of them gets caught by the predator, and then the rest of them go back to eating grass because they're safe now. So they know how to turn it off. You ever have a dog and the dog's sound asleep and the next instant it's barking its head off because of some noise that you didn't even hear? And then 2 minutes later it's back asleep again. Animals know how to turn it off. When the emergency is over, they know how to shut down. As human beings, we don't know how to do that. We get stirred up, we get something going in our mind, and we do what's called rumination. And that makes us afraid, it makes us angry, it makes us depressed, it makes us suspicious, it makes us paranoid. And these are all biological reactions that are designed to keep us safe. But again, if they persist for a long period of time, they can have very definite medical and mental health ramifications. So I'm continuing in the handout. If fear persists for more than 20 minutes, there is tissue damage that must be repaired. And the reason why is because fight or flight is like driving your car with your accelerator pressed to the floor. If you do that all the time, your engine's going to wear out too fast because you're stressing it beyond its normal design limits. Same thing is true for us. Continuing. If we don't get adequate rest and rejuvenation every day, any tissue damage that has accumulated may not get fully repaired. And if accumulated long enough, may lead to chronic illness. So in other words, our rest and rejuvenation period is designed to repair any tissue damage. But because of our high-stress lifestyle, we may not get that rest and rejuvenation. And especially when we're stressed all the time, like some people are now because of all that's going on, you never get the tissue damage being repaired. And that is not good for your body. Now, continuing. It is my opinion that most chronic illness is a result of this type of unrepaired tissue damage that occurred because of our stressful lifestyles. And I say that because I've worked with a lot of people with chronic illness and been able to help them roll back their chronic illness. And when that happens, they get better. So we know the tissue damage got repaired. That's how we know that happened. There are other reasons why we want to limit the time duration of fear. When we're fearful, the biological fear response shuts off all non-essential systems, which unfortunately includes the thinking mind. That's why it's hard to think straight when your mind is full of fear. That's why people do stupid things. When they're afraid or angry or otherwise upset, the thinking mind is shut off. The body does that because it's trying to protect you. How the lizard brain thinks. That's because the biological fear response, called the fight-or-flight response, goes back evolutionary-wise to the lizards. It's a primitive part of the brain, sometimes called the lizard brain for that reason, that is at the top of the spinal cord below the main part of our brain. The lizard brain is physically very small in lizards and also in us. If you look at it in physiological diagrams, it's incredibly small compared to the rest of the brain. Lizards didn't have to think rationally about things, so they didn't have a rational brain to do that with. And their much smaller, non-rational brains only had a split second to react when a danger was present. So that part of our brains that has stuck around because of our evolutionary history reacts in a split second without thinking through anything. So when I'm driving on Route 78 up near the Lehigh Valley, and a truck starts to edge over into my lane, I get an instant adrenaline rush, and I'm automatically adjusting the car to a safe place without even thinking about it. My rational brain does not get involved. I don't have time to say, oh, the truck is coming over. Is that a problem? Should I react to that problem? How should I react? I'm already reacting. So that's the lizard brain in operation. So it is a good thing. Continuing, it is programmed to decide in that split second as to whether the given situation is a danger or not. And if it decides the current situation is a danger, it only has three options: fight, flight, or freeze. So fighting, it's obvious, we're hitting the predator with a stick. Flight, we're running away from the predator. Freeze, we're like the possum, we're making no movement and hoping that the predator will not see us and go away. So no matter which one of those three options it picks, all of which involve violent physical responses to a violent external threat, it shuts off all bodily systems not necessary for a violent physical response. Shuts off your gastrointestinal system, which is why fear makes you not hungry, and prolonged fear can give you an upset stomach or an irritable bowel or even worse. Shuts off the reproductive system, which is why it's more difficult for women to conceive when they're in chronic fear. It rebalances the endocrine system for temporary increases in blood sugar and cortisol, which is a hormone, which is useful if you're taking violent action, but if sustained, can lead to diabetes and other stress-related hormonal imbalances. In fact, your physician may test you for cortisol level if he thinks you're having a problem of this nature. This fight-or-flight response causes the muscles to be taut for instantaneous life-saving movement. If you've ever found yourself being wary of something, your body tenses up, you're ready to run, that's what we're talking about. But if sustained, can lead to chronic muscle tension problems. So if you're sitting at home worrying about a virus, then your muscles are tight, and that's not helpful. There's this thing called the TMS, tension myositis syndrome, documented by Dr. John Sarno, which seems to have caused many cases of intractable chronic pain not relieved by other medical procedures. And I say that because a lot of the people I see seem to be having this difficulty. They have intractable chronic pain, which has not been relieved by other medical procedures. And I have seen their pain be relieved by mind-body techniques. So obviously there's something to the effect that the fight-or-flight system has on the body. It causes real, tangible medical problems. Now, this all happens through neuropeptides. We actually have a second nervous system in our body, not just the central nervous system that you can find if you dissect the body, but there are neuropeptides. These are things in the blood that are generated by organs in the body, and then they circulate throughout the body, and then they cause effects when they get to different parts of the body. So these neuropeptides drive our moods. It's what makes you angry, it's what makes you fearful. It causes our moods, all right, so I'm going to read again. It causes the neuropeptides that drive our moods to be oriented towards fear and anger, both life-saving in a real emergency. In other words, in a real emergency, you need to be fearful, and sometimes you need to be angry. So, boom, just like that. In that instant, you're either fearful or angry. However, if this hormonal response is sustained over time, it leads to the psychological problems of alienation of others. That's outwardly directed fear, like someone who's jealous and keeps checking up on their partner, and pretty soon their partner can't stand to be with them. So it causes alienation. That's outwardly directed fear. Anxiety, that's inwardly directed fear. In other words, other people can't see it. They may notice you're a little nervous, but you're really feeling it. It's inwardly directed fear. Abuse of others. If you are habitually angry towards other people, you can be abusive towards them. And so that's outwardly directed anger. and depression, inwardly directed anger. So all of these four things that I just said, these are inappropriate. These are hormonal imbalances for a long period of time, and it's causing you to have a mood disorder or some other kind of psychological issue that is caused by being out of balance for a period of time. And so what we see is that fundamental to all of this thing is fight or flight being turned on too long, too much, too long. Shutting down your immune system. Now, this is the big one in terms of what we're dealing with right now. And last, but definitely not least, because the immune system is hormone-driven, your immune system shuts off when fight or flight is activated, because you don't need your immune system when your only option seems to be being eaten or escaping being eaten. That's why people often get colds a day or so after having had an upsetting interaction with someone else, because the upset feelings tanked the immune system, and whatever virus was around at the time was now enabled to obtain a foothold. In other words, the virus was around, you were okay, you got really, really, really upset, and the next thing you know, you got a stuffy nose or your throat's itchy, and before long you have a cold. And that's because those upset feelings drove the body into fight or flight survival state, and survival state is not the state you want to be in when there's some sort of an infectious illness around. So I continue. But when the enemy is an invisible virus you can't even see, if fear is your primary response, you have to be afraid of everyone and everything. And this fear shuts off your immune system, and having your immune system turned off because of your fear makes you distinctly more susceptible to a viral infection. So now there's a catch-22. The fear that is supposed to keep us safe has just made us more susceptible to the very thing the fear is supposed to protect us from, the infectious illness. So one of the things that happens is, because your immune system function is less when you're afraid, that's why we're doing things like social distancing. You might have normal resistance to a virus, but if your immune system function is way down because you're terrified, now you really need to be kept safe from even contacting that virus. That's why they're saying do things like social distancing. And we have a large part of the population right now that is simply freaked out. Because they're freaked out, their immune system function is down. And so there's a very good reason why they need to practice social distancing. So what we're going to do here is we're not going to say don't do social distancing. Of course, we want you to do everything the government is telling you to make sure that we stay safe, because we have this public health people who are thinking through the whole thing. But what we want to do is help you raise, get you out of fight or flight and get you back into a higher immune system function. And mindfulness is one way of doing that. And so that's what we're talking about here. So now you're not only doing physical things to keep yourself safe, but you're also raising your body's ability. So if there is accidental contact, you have more of a possibility of having less of a problem with your physical body. How the tunnel vision of fear gets us in trouble. And as if all of that weren't enough, fear itself is a biologically designed overreaction, giving us tunnel vision and 100% of our resources in a life-saving blast of energy and strength. If you're in a burning house, if you're in a wrecked car, you need tunnel vision and 110% of your resources to keep yourself safe. So it's there to save your life. But the overreactive 110% part means this life-saving physical effort cannot be sustained over time without damage to our physical mechanism. So to make an analogy, you can take a regular high-performance car engine and put it in a drag racer and soup it up so it's running at hundreds of horsepower over the design rating it was originally designed for. And you can achieve incredibly high speeds in that quarter mile, and that car engine will be worn out after only a couple of miles of races. So if you run with your pedal to the metal, so to speak, if you just run your life too stimulated too much of the time, you're wearing your body out too fast. Now, the tunnel vision part, what's that all about? When you focus down on just the emergency, when I'm on Route 78 and the truck starts to come over, I'm not thinking about my tax return. I'm making sure I'm safe. I have tunnel vision in that moment. You know, if you're in a situation where there's a mugger and you're trying to get out of the area because you sense danger, you have tunnel vision. You are only focused on that. So tunnel vision is there to save our life. However, continuing, the tunnel vision part means we make poor decisions because we're so focused on what seems to be wrong that we're not paying attention to all the data. Remember I said how the part of us that runs the fight or flight system is very small? It doesn't have all the nerve endings of our rational brain, our forebrain, the part up here that thinks through things and all the parts of our brain that are there to help us make a rational decision. It's just there to make a split-second decision. So have you ever said, I've overreacted? That's what that means. That part of you didn't have all the data, and it had to decide in a split second whether this was a danger or not. It decided it was an emergency, and later on you look at that and you say, wow, what was I thinking? So the bottom line is that we have hormone-based overreactions when we're afraid and angry. And these fearful and angry reactions to life situations are not reality-based. Now, they're a tiny bit reality-based because you have a tiny bit of data. And according to that tiny bit of data, it looks like an emergency. But we have tunneled our vision so far down that we're paying attention to only a small amount of the available data. So if you've been able to think things through, you would have said, nah, not an emergency. So here I'm saying this is the cause of all domestic, national, and international violence. It's basically the cause of violence. For example, we band together in angry mobs and decide that it's okay to kill, hurt, or destroy anybody on the other side of an imaginary line in the sand called an international border or other imaginary boundary between us and the villainous other. The bottom line is that when you're chronically fearful, you're not only killing your body because you're using up energy so fast that your body is dying faster than it's living, but this us versus them tunnel vision means that you're making bad decisions and in the process damaging relationships with those important to you. Have you ever said to yourself after you just had a conflict with someone, what was I thinking? Why did I say that? I wish I hadn't overreacted that way. That's because the hormones released during anger and fear distort your perception into such a starkly polarized point of view that everyone outside of your small circle of love has become the enemy. You feel justified in hurting, killing, destroying, or otherwise doing great damage to the other in the cause of preserving your own skin. You can even become angry at your partner or children, turn them into the other in a moment of fear or anger, and take an action that damages the relationship with those we love, such as an argument or worse, spousal or child abuse. That's why cops don't like to go to domestic calls because they know the people there are basically out of their minds. They're out of their thinking minds. They're listening only to their fear and anger. I was in a park once and a couple got into a screaming match and they were banging each other's cars against each other. They were shouting and screaming, and I thought, boy, if either one of them had a gun, there would be a real problem at this point because they were not in touch with rationality. They were in that lizard brain for sure. Okay, so now when we're dealing with an international emergency and the only options seem to be how fearful we become today, everybody else in the world has now become the enemy because they might be the one that makes you or someone in your circle of loved ones sick. How in the world do you stay sane, loving, and meditative? The necessity of staying sane, loving, and meditative. If we are going to survive as a human race, we are ultimately going to have to forego violence and stay sane, loving, and meditative. Let me be clear. That does not preclude being cautious, prudent, preventative, and wise when necessary. For caution, prudence, prevention, and wisdom are hallmarks of the person who is not fearful, but instead has a meditative, thoughtful approach to life. The difference is that when we're cautious, prudent, preventative, and wise, we have eliminated the overreactive part of our thinking, the hormone-driven overreaction that leads to violence, such as fighting over resources, the trance of scarcity. Because when we're upset, caught in fear and anger, we are programmed by biology through a lens that sees not enough, a trance of scarcity. So we go to the store and buy too much toilet paper because our fear makes us overreact by playing mental movies of running out. When a lot of people do that at the same time, it causes an artificial scarcity of resources and can even lead to violence, such as recent episodes of people taking items from other people's shopping carts. More sinisterly, there has been an explosion of buying guns over the last few weeks, with gun dealers reporting selling hundreds of guns more than usual. Under the influence of this trance of scarcity, we can justify abusing the earth and its inhabitants, polluting, hoarding, and otherwise making poor decisions that do not solve the problem. They make it worse. An example would be those who have engaged in price gouging in recent days, such as those in the news who bought up resources like hand sanitizer to create an artificial shortage and then attempted to sell it back to others at inflated prices. This is all fight or flight response at work. Luckily, we also have another physical system we can activate instead, called the relaxation response. All meditative systems have as their focus the achievement of this response, which is a hormonally based experience of peace, harmony, joy, and bonding with others in our families, our communities, and in our larger world. And I want to mention this all takes place on a continuum. You're not just totally in fight or flight, and you're not just totally in the relaxation response. Most of the time, we're in between. I mean, somebody who's freaked out, people who are on a domestic call and the police are called, they're totally in fight or flight. Somebody who's in really deep meditation, they're totally in the relaxation response. But we're often somewhere in between. We're feeling okay, we want to go to the store, but we're feeling some anxiety because we listened to the news or read the paper about scary things, and so we're having both at the same time. So what we're talking about is in that situation, which is everyday life, right now, how can we raise our immune system response by going back into beginner's mind? Living from the wise part of yourself. All of this, luckily, is a continuum, so that even if something in the news rattles us, so that we're momentarily upset and therefore in fight or flight, we don't have to stay that way. As soon as we remember that we can meditate and calm ourselves down, we can begin moving back in that direction and go back to living in a loving way, with a healthy dose of caution, prudence, prevention, and wisdom to keep us safe. Living from the wise part of ourselves is vastly different from living from the fearful part of ourselves. The wise part of ourselves takes the well-being of all other beings into account, including the animal and vegetable world and the earth itself, which is our home. To do this, we have to ground ourselves in essential life. The true nature of life, when stripped bare of fear and anger, and instead seen through the loving eyes of someone who is relaxed and in touch with the essential nature of life. Mindful grounding in essential life. Mindfulness is an important tool for keeping yourself grounded in essential life. Essential life is that part of our life experience that is most essential, that is most closely linked to our experience of life. When we get tuned into essential life, our perception of life changes dramatically, moving from fear to faith, from pain to peace, from grasping to giving, and from fighting to loving. And the end result is a profoundly peaceful place, called in Scripture, that peace that passeth understanding, and experienced as a feeling of peace that feels like it has no beginning and no end. In other words, this beginner's mind is profoundly different from our normal everyday waking state. The experience of essential life. In this frame of mind, our bodies are relaxed, our minds are at peace. We don't have to do anything right now except enjoy this profoundly peaceful place. Once you get in that place, all you want to do is stay there. It feels so good. And any action we need to take feels peaceful to do. And the outcome feels peaceful and positive. That action starts in peaceful thoughts and ends in peaceful activity that harms no one and increases the amount of peace in the world. Feels good to do it. And it feels even better afterwards. As we contemplate the increased joy in our own little corner of the world that has been created by what we have done. And the good news is that even if we started out in an upset place, we can make this emotional shift in just a few minutes, just by doing a few meditative actions in a specific order. So even if you read the paper or heard the news and you're all riled up, do this meditation and you're not going to be riled up anymore. You're going to be feeling peaceful again. That's what mindfulness is all about. Now, this next quote, this is a spiritual universe. If you've been reading the news recently, nobody's talking about this being a spiritual universe. That's because when you're in the normal waking state of consciousness, and especially if you're filled with fear, ain't nothing seems spiritual about what's going on. So you just can't get into a spiritual place. Yet I know all of you have had spiritual moments when you felt good about life and felt an intrinsic spirituality to things, even if it was just parked at the Grand Canyon and just saying, wow, this is amazing. I feel so good just sitting here and watching. Because this is a contemplative spirituality group, I'm going to bring in some talk about how spirit relates to all of this, and I'm going to connect it to the mystical experience, which is linked to the heart of all of this. So the next part says, this is a spiritual universe. That's right. This universe is filled with spirit. There is a living, loving, infinite intelligence that permeates all of creation, which in Scripture is called omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent. Traditionally, our connection to this living, loving energy was called God, the Holy Spirit, or the awareness of the presence. In modern times, we call it by other names as well, the experience of a higher power, or my intuition, or my wisest self, or myself at my best, or what I'm like when I'm in the zone. It's also been called the still small voice, because it's very still, it's very quiet, and you can't hear it unless you're really peaceful. And since most people aren't peaceful, they never hear it. Or if they hear it, it gets lost in the noise. So if you want to get in touch with infinite intelligence, with divine guidance, which is present at all times, at every moment of our lives, then you need to learn how to get into beginner's mind. And you need to do something like what we're about to do right now as part of your daily spiritual practice. Next paragraph. When you're in fight or flight, this being a spiritual universe is the farthest thing from your mind. Fight or flight is such a biologically primitive response that, like the lizards we've evolved from, you can't feel anything spiritual when we're in it. Instead, you're filled with the need to hurt, kill, or destroy in order to maintain your health and well-being, or at the very least, to run away as far as possible from the feared thing. Hence the need for things like social distancing. So grounding in essential life is the opposite process of regrounding yourself to the perception that this is a spiritual universe, getting in contact with that spiritual energy, dropping into peace, and contacting your inner wisdom as to what is the wisest and most peaceful way to navigate the next period of time. And so the next page is the grounding in essential life, which is going to be a separate recording. And so what I recommend now is that before you listen to that recording, you take a break. It's good to move your body around, get a glass of water or anything else you need to do. To feel comfortable, you'll find yourself going deeper. But before we do anything about that, I want to say one more thing. I want to root all of this in the mystical experience. Because the mystical experience is what beginner's mind is all about. In the meditative traditions, they call it by many different names. But when we look at it from the standpoint of a spiritual tradition, it's a mystical experience. It's a contact with the essential nature of life. It's in contact with an energy, and the deeper you go into it, the more spiritual it feels. When you get into it really deeply, and I'm not talking about 5 minutes of, yeah, I'm relaxing a little bit. I'm talking about getting really deep into it. People come back from that and say, wow, that was a spiritual experience. That's what we're talking about. And so this grounding in essential life has the potential to do that. If you have the time and place to get really into it. Or it can be less than that, just enough to tune you up before you turn the key and go off to the grocery store to buy your groceries. So let's take a break for a few minutes, and I'm going to stop the video recording, and when I come back and unpause the video recording, then I will do the meditation, and I'm also going to make it a separate MP3, so you can listen to the MP3 by itself at a later time if you wish to do so. So I am stopping the MP3.